Welcome to the DRF Sports Podcast, brought to you by DRF Sports. America's most trusted name in horse racing is now providing sports bettors with exclusive data, analytics, previews, videos, and expert picks on all major sports. Bet smarter and have more fun doing it. It's the DRF Sports Podcast, and now, your host, Sheldon Alexander. Ready, set, bet.
This is the DRF Sports Podcast, episode 15. Make sure you like and follow wherever you get your podcast. I'm your host, Sheldon Alexander. A reminder, we do this twice a week. On Tuesdays, we recap the week that was, and on Fridays, it's the Picks Pod. But we start here with a little reminder and maybe a lesson that comes because hopefully you listened to the Tuesday pod and took advantage of us telling you that you got to take advantage of the Broncos getting 3.5 points. And then what happens? All the line movement occurs all the way up until game time on Thursday, and the Browns end up winning by 3. The good old hook coming out, and hopefully it worked out for you because it worked out for us. And this is why you should listen to each pod when the episode drops. Just set the notifications on your phone, right? Like and subscribe. You get a little notice every time the podcast drops, and you get to take advantage of the number. But hey, that's what we try to do here. Help you with some advice. And here's a little more advice. If you haven't done so already, make sure you sign up for free at drf.com/sports to receive 2 free weekly newsletters delivered to your email inbox every Friday and Sunday. Both are packed with powerful betting angles you don't want to miss. The Sunday Scoop has had a winning week all 6 weeks of the current NFL season and has delivered an extremely profitable 72% against the spread. Listen to those numbers. So make sure you check it out, drf.com/sports. That's where you need to be every single day for all of your insight and analysis. Plus, of course, we go in depth on this podcast. However you want your betting information, we've got you covered. drf.com/sports. But as mentioned on today's show, it's a Friday Picks Pod, and Matt Russell is back yet again. We'll recap all of the line movement from the Thursday nighter, and we'll go through our best bets in both the NFL and NCAA. And he joins us right about now. So if we ever needed an ad for why you need to tune in to this podcast, as soon as it drops on Tuesdays and Fridays, it's because this guy is hunting down the line value. My dude, Mr. Matt Russell, is back. And we have to start with the Thursday night, because on Tuesday, that number was Broncos 3.5. And we'd like that. And you said to jump on it then. And why exactly was that so important, as we just witnessed the game on Thursday night?
Right. Yeah. And that game that we witnessed, far less interesting and entertaining than watching the line moves throughout the week yesterday. Right. Like, once we actually got to the game, it was sort of like, all right, just a couple of teams going back and forth, kind of sauntering around the field. Right. There wasn't really that much to it. But everything that happened between Tuesday and Thursday was, I mean, the way the game ended, it turned out to be outstanding, because what happens is, right, we get it at +3.5, then the Baker Mayfield announcement comes in, and that's on Wednesday afternoon. And so I'm here to say, and like, you know, some people might take this the wrong way, but honestly, if you lost money on the spread on that game last night, like, this is exactly why you need this podcast or a lot of different educational materials when it comes to sports betting, right? I'm not telling you need to retire from sports betting. I'm just telling you, you need to get better at it, because that number is at +3.5 and you had plenty of time to get that on Denver. And then once it comes down below the key number of 3, you cannot bet that game on the Denver side. It doesn't mean you have to bet Cleveland. I personally, listen, I got the, you know, parade route going outside my house because I have +3.5 from early on this week that I bet. And then I came back and I'm sitting there on Thursday. And as the day goes on and you start getting the injury report and it's like, okay, well, 2 of the 3 offensive linemen that we were worried might not be in the game. Jarvis Landry is back all of a sudden. Now, Jarvis Landry's not going to move the point spread, but Jarvis Landry's going to get you a first down when you absolutely need it, right? And that's going to extend a drive, and who knows what happens after that. But more importantly, when the offensive linemen are back in there, whether it's the 2 guys who were healthy that we weren't really sure were going to be, or whether it was just the backup guys that were in there, These guys are in practice, right? And I don't know if you've ever been a backup on a team, right? But you go to practice and you know what the plays are, you know how to do everything. But the reason that you're a backup is maybe you're 5% not as talented as the guy in front of you. Maybe you're 25% not as talented as the guy in front of you. But it's not because you don't know where to go and what to do, right? In fact, you need to know more about where you need to go and what you need to do. And so when a backup, say right tackle comes in or left tackle comes in, right? Like, yeah, he's going to have trouble with a Von Miller on passing downs. But if there just aren't that many passing downs because you know where to go in the run game, right? Where to seal the blocks, et cetera, then I don't want to say anybody can just run through it, but a guy like D'Ernest Johnson can run through it. And this guy, and listen, this is also a good lesson for when we're talking about teams that quote unquote quit, whether it's late in the season or they don't like their coach or this, that, or whatever. This guy gets one opportunity potentially, right? To put something on tape, to be the guy, to show some other team that he can be a, you know, $5, $10 million a year type of a guy, right? And he knows that. And especially it's not just a, you know, 1 o'clock game on a Sunday, it's a Thursday game. And so he gets that opportunity and he takes advantage of it. And so as Thursday is kind of rolling around and like the bill of health, if you will, gets cleaner and cleaner for Cleveland. And that, but the number comes down, and you and I talked about it. You know, speaking of the Tuesday podcast, we said when we were on Denver, we're like, man, I like them a lot better. The Broncos, I like the Broncos a lot better if Baker Mayfield plays in this game, because if he might play the way that he played on Sunday, because he is compromised, right? And that turns leads it to turnovers, and maybe the Browns are just trying to do too much against the Broncos. Well, once Keenum comes in, you get the better player in that instance, right? Not obviously overall future, et cetera, but you get the better player for that game, and you get 2 to 3 points across the key number of three. Like that was, that had to be a Cleveland bet at that point. So I come in over the top of my other bet on Cleveland. I end up winning both for a full, like three full units. I use it in Circa Millions contest, excuse me, like all over town. So outstanding day. You know, I need a noisemaker, maybe, you know, one of those clapper things for a party. Like I should be wearing a party hat. Outstanding day. And again, everybody should have won, right? Whether you're on Denver early at +3.5. And it's totally reasonable if you were on Denver +3.5 to just sit back and be like, you know what? I have a ton of closing line value here. I got in before the news. I will just sit with that bet. And so I was really, really pleased for other people who would have listened to this show and grabbed that at +3.5 that they were able to win that bet, even though, in, you know, I would have been fine with Cleveland winning by 20 because I would have won overall, but it ends up working out great for everybody involved. So that's just one of those like intricate, like betting things, right? That we don't see that often.
It's one of the things we talk about on this pod all the time, right? About trying to figure out where the line is, where it's going, and where it could be, right? It's what we try to talk about all the time. So that's why I enjoy the conversation so much, because a lot of it is a learning experience, especially from the angle that I'm coming at it from, where I'm like, okay, that 3.5 points, I'm okay to just sit on that for a bit and see where that goes. But that was a Thursday nighter. And the where my record's at coming off of last week, I needed that win. So thank you very much for that cover and the Broncos covering that 3.5 points. Let's keep things moving, though, as we get to the Friday picks. And we're going to try to see how many games we can get through. So let's start. The Chiefs, 4.5 point favorites at the Tennessee Titans. And this game is sitting nicely in the Vegas zone. My first initial thought is Derrick Henry might run for over 300 yards in this game. And I know I might be leaning too much off of just what happened last week and my overall fate of the Chiefs defense, but I love the home dogs here in the Titans. I don't know. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Honestly, I think you're going to be surprised with what I say here. I really like the Chiefs in this game.
Hold on. I just said, tell me why I'm wrong. That's all. Isn't that what I said?
Of course. But like, you know what I mean? Like my brand in a lot of ways is like Chiefs too, you know, too much and like, blah, blah, blah. Listen, like that was such a big win. You know, we were obviously all over that on Tennessee on Monday, but you're right, man. Like you can't get too sort of, you know, hopped up on that, especially with the injuries that were happening over and over and over again. Now, listen, a lot of these guys are probably going to be able to start the game against Kansas City. But once that ball, especially in the secondary, right? Once that ball starts flying around from Patrick Mahomes, they're going to be, you know, Jackrabbit Jenkins on Monday night, right? Like he's getting, they keep referring to him as Jack and Jackrabbit. And it's like, he's, yeah. How about Burned Rabbit? Like he is getting absolutely roasted all over the field. And like Breon Borders is in the mix. And like Pat Borders would have had a better chance to cover some guys out in the shout out to Toronto Blue Jays from the early 90s. And so I'm looking at this going, okay, yes, you're right. Like Derrick Henry could have a field day, but the key element to this, I think, is Chris Jones, the defensive tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs, who has basically missed this entire season. And he might be back this week. And that's a guy who is a difference maker. Now, it's not going to make the Chiefs defense good, right? It's not going to make them a top 10 defense necessarily. But like when it comes to the Chiefs defense, like, aren't we just kind of looking for like not the worst or like not bottom 5 to 7 in the league? Like, how about just top 25? And so the one adjustment that the Chiefs made into last week, and by the way, like they only gave up what 13 points to Washington last week, and nobody sort of noticed that because Patrick Mahomes is throwing interceptions and then they still ended up covering. And so it was like, oh, but by the way, like they didn't give up 20 points to, you know, anybody, which that's kind of where we thought the defense was. So for me, it's like they made a change, right? They take out Sorensen, who like everybody agreed that, you know, the safety for the Chiefs might be the worst player in the NFL. They take him out. They're playing him a lot less. Now they could potentially get Jones back. And that's a second impact player along with Tyrann Mathieu on that defense. And when you look at other teams, you know, the Rams, for example, it's like they only have two sort of true big money impact guys. And it's like, what would happen if Aaron Donald wasn't in the middle for them right now? Wouldn't be necessarily as bad as Kansas City, but still. So I think the defense getting a little bit better here. I'm not positive AJ Brown and Julio Jones can make it through a game. Obviously AJ Brown a little bit more likely, right? We've been on the Julio Jones thing since the summertime that he's just not going to be a factor, right? And so, you know, again, I think there is some value to this line. You saw it kind of hop up right away from 4.5 to 5.5 after this game because the injuries looked so rough. But I think there's enough people here and enough money on Tennessee that it's going to stay in, as you said, as you call it, the Vegas zone. So we're not going to see the situation that we saw on Monday where it goes up to 6, goes up to 6.5, even some 7s in some places. And so I'm in on the Kansas City Chiefs at -4.5. I think they throw the ball all over Tennessee. And again, in 2021, if you can throw the ball all over a team and they can run it all over you, I will still take the team throwing the ball all over the other team. It's just red zone, right? Like we saw with the Bills, that's what jammed them up. Those two early field goals, they were running the ball or throwing the ball, I should say, up and down the field, but they weren't able to capitalize. Kansas City in the red zone, I think that's going to be a different story. I like Kansas City a ton, -4.5.
That's the angle right there that's actually going to flip me here, because it's Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense in the red zone as opposed to what the Bills were able to do. That's the point right there. And that's why I love this pod so much, right? Because I genuinely come on here saying, hey, this is what I'm thinking. And we talk it through and it's like, okay, I like that. I like that. Chiefs. Let's go. Let's keep things moving here. We got the Falcons as 2.5-point favorites at Miami. And I know the Dolphins have been struggling, but this kind of seems like a game that's for their whole entire season, or else it's 1-2-3 Cancun, to borrow the NBA term here. But I kind of feel like there's two dueling narratives going on here from the public point of view, the simple narratives that I come with here. It's the season on the line game or the team coming off the bye week. Which way, what are you thinking of this game here with the Chiefs the Falcons as 2.5-point favorites?
Yeah, it's like, it's not 1-2-3 Cancun, it's 1-2-3 down the street, right? Like South Beach, right? It's like, just meet me by the beach where we hang out all the time, but we're just going to keep doing that because it feels like they're just kind of hanging out. But you're right, like the value, or I should say the, you know, interpretation of this team, the perception of this team in the Dolphins is that it's all-time low right now. I shouldn't say maybe all-time low. They did have like a 1-15 season in their history. But in recent memory, right? Because they go and they lose last week to Jacksonville, which we were all over, right? So it's not like, you know, we're holding on to anything here when it comes to the Miami Dolphins, but it looks like they may get healthier, right? By the way, they played that game last week without their two top corners, right? Byron Jones and Xavien Howard. Those two guys come back. We might be also looking at getting a couple more weapons there for Tua, Preston Williams, and Devontae Parker. Williams looks like he's in. Parker, a little bit dicey, but, you know, again, that's a maybe, right? And again, like we talk about the Falcons all the time, right? Like, why would we ever give, you know, points to the Falcons? And it's like, because they had a week off, Like, I don't know that that's necessarily enough for me to just completely switch my opinion on the Falcons, because they beat the Jets on a neutral field in a game that, like, the Jets didn't even show up for the first half of that game. Like, I don't really understand necessarily the love here for the Falcons again, especially if they get a guy like Howard back, where, you know, he can do some decent work against Calvin Ridley. And like, I'd like to think the Kyle Pitts news is out, right? Where it's like, he's good, right? Should probably pay attention to him. Like, while Robert Saleh is still trying to figure out, you know, who this Kyle Pitts guy is, right? Everybody else in the league knows that this guy's legit. So all of that is to say, like, we've seen this line move from, you know, what was a preseason sort of 3.5 type concept now to 2.5 and like tickling 3 here and there. And like, that's just too much for me, right? Like, again, whether it's Jets, Falcons, whether it's Dolphins, Jags, or any sort of combination of that 4-team round robin, you can throw the Texans in there, you can throw the Lions in there. Like, why are we taking points? Or like, why are we giving points? Like, why wouldn't we take the points every single time, right? Why wouldn't we take a juiced up money line for us, right? Like, let's grab the +125 on the money line, because you're right. This team is like, it's back against the wall. And if like Brian Flores is any kind of a coach, any kind of a motivator, this is going to be the best game that the Miami Dolphins play all season long. Now, maybe they're just so exhausted, as if their flight from, you know, London, like, I was probably more tired by the time like the end of Sunday was, you know, came around last week. They were probably in their beds if they really, really wanted to be, right? It's a 5-hour flight. They were done their game at noon Eastern. They were probably on a flight by 2-3 o'clock and home before like 9 p.m. So like, this whole like concept of like, how can you know, pick yourself up off the ground after a game, it's, you know, that game was at 9 o'clock our time, which means it was in the middle of the afternoon their time. So it's not like a massive adjustment. And again, it's been 6-7 days here. The season is on the line if you are the Dolphins, and who knows where it could go after this if they lose. So yeah, I mean, it's, you know, all you need to know about this slate, by the way, in general, is that like, two games in, we're like, gotta talk Falcons Dolphins, gotta do it, because there just isn't that much to sink our teeth into this week. But yeah, like, give me the Dolphins here, same premise, but again, at least there's some handicap to this game where you're like, okay, like, this has got to be the best the Dolphins can play. And the Falcons have just sort of been dining out on that win for a couple of weeks, and that might not make them, or that might make them a little bit less desperate, if you will, against the Dolphins.
One of my go-to lines, I say it all the time, two trash teams, just take the points, right? So if we keep things moving here, speaking of what some perceive as a trash team, the aforementioned Texans at the Cardinals. A big boy spread here, as the Cardinals are favored by -17.5 points. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't, I just have trouble fundamentally laying 17.5 points. And our boy Davis Mills, we talked about it last week. I had someone in my mentions chirping me for riding with the Texans all the time, but they face such terrible spreads like this. And they're actually 500 team against the spread.
Yeah.
17.5 is a lot of points.
Yeah.
I'm going to lean towards taking the points. I need you to talk me out of it.
No, man. Like, and there's 18s out there. There's 18.5 in the contest line. You can find some 18.5 in real life as well. And that's like, just think about it. If Houston draws a pass interference penalty and gets in field goal range and kicks a field goal, the Cardinals at that point, you know, if it's 17.5, they need to score 3 unanswered touchdowns in order to cover that game, right? Like, that's wild. And again, Houston's at least, you know, I don't want to use functional, and you said like some think that they're a trash team. It's like, no, like, we all think it and it's all true, right? Like, they are definitely a trash team. Like, this isn't like, oh, secret. Like, they're not good. Like, they are a very bad team. But like, again, I still think they're functional, right? Like, it's just a matter of holding on to the ball, right? Like, fumbles from the receivers and the running backs and just stuff like that. Like, Davis Mills is fine. And by the way, there's some like low key talk that there might be some Tyrod Taylor for this game. And you know how we feel about that, right? Like, okay, we like him, especially getting a bunch of points there. So we're hoping that that's necessarily the case. But honestly, Davis Mills, Tyrod Taylor, like, I don't really care. This is just too many points, right? Like, the card, it's 6-0. Like, this is like rudimentary, right? It's undefeated Cardinals team. Like, people are getting really excited about it. It's too, you know, quote unquote flashy offense that, by the way, their quarterback hasn't cracked 250 yards in like 3 games. And it's like, okay, I guess that's why this number is as high as it is.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Cardinals have a big game against the Packers on Thursday night next week, right? Like, there is no reason for them to go, you know, pardon the term, balls to the wall here. Like, yeah. They don't need to run this score up late, right? They can go to the run game if they are up 2 touchdowns with 7 minutes to go, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I mean, this is just, honestly, we could have stopped this conversation with, it's an 18-point spread. Like, you know, that's kind of all you need to know. Like, you take your chances. And listen, that's not to say that the Cardinals couldn't, wouldn't, or even wouldn't, you know, will blow them out. Like, that's never what we're talking about here. But when we're talking about the concept of, like, do we have a 55%, 60% chance of covering a game here? Like, you throw any two teams together, give me 18 points, and, like, I'm going to say yes. So, yeah, Texans plus 17.5, 18. You know, again, shop for the best of the number because 18s are certainly out there. And like I said, if they get an early field goal, you're at least, you've got a little relief on your hands there because you can watch the Cards rack up 3 touchdowns and still not be fully covering this game.
Hey, just asking for a field goal isn't asking too much. I don't think that's asking too much.
No.
But hey, the Eagles are at the Raiders. Raiders at home getting laying 3 points. And as long as a hook is not involved, I kind of lean towards taking the Raiders here in their high power, big play offense. I don't really like it, though. I'm going to be honest with you. I lean Raiders, but what do you make of the Eagles and just kind of the trajectory that they're on right now over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's easy to watch that Thursday night game last week and be like, this Eagles team's garbage, but like Tampa Bay is really good. And I, you know, you talked about people in your mentions, right? I have people telling me that like Tampa Bay shouldn't be my number one ranked team in the NFL, right? That it should be the Bills, it should be the Cardinals. And it's like, I mean, come on, gang, right? Like, do we have to be like that quick on the trigger when it comes to anointing teams like the Bills and the Cardinals? Like, we talked about the Chargers last week, right? And it's not like we don't like any of those teams, but they can be the second, the fourth, the sixth best team in the league. And it's a far cry from where they were at the start of the season. Maybe not necessarily for the Bills, but like even still, second best team 6 weeks into the season is a pretty decent jump for a Bills team that we thought were maybe like fourth or fifth. So the point is like, what have the Bucks done or not done to say that like they shouldn't be the top team in the league? Now it's just a matter of invincibility and all of that sort of thing. But when it comes to the Eagles, I'm not going to beat them up because the Bucks like took care of business with them, you know, on Thursday. But like that creates a lot of value. I think the Eagles are a very live team to win this game because the Raiders come off a game where they're like, you know, all hands on deck, everybody's attention, division game on the road against Denver, probably better that they were on the road to sort of, you know, arm's length some of the stuff that was going on with that franchise. And they come out and it's like Rick Bisaccia, and they probably hired that guy or you know, promoted him, if you will, to interim coach because the team probably likes him, right? Special teams, you know, coordinator guy that like people can get behind. And so that's what you saw. And I just think the Raiders are coming back down to earth here a little bit. And I just don't see how this number should be anywhere over 3. Like 3 makes some sense to me. But again, we saw them against the Dolphins. We've seen them against, you know, a handful of these other teams where it's just like, yeah, they're okay. They're an okay team. And we just saw again from the Broncos, like, is that again a team that is really all that scary? Right. It's like, how great does that win look even just 4 days later as the Broncos, you know, that was a 3-point game. And as we mentioned, we're thrilled that it was. Like that was a pretty convincing 3-point win, if you can have such a thing for the Browns, you know, for the second string Browns, if you will. So I'm going to take the Eagles here. I like the 3 points. I'm taking the money line, all of those things. Like that's, you know, again, I think this is a great buy low, sell high spot for both of these teams.
Yeah. And the Raiders, maybe they try to throw me off the scent with their performance last week. And there's a lot of stuff going on with the Raiders. You're totally right. And I'm tiptoeing around this, but they're doing a little too much this weekend. I'll just say that to try to throw us off the scent of what's been going on with their team.
You ever have a rough week at work and then you go on vacation or you go away for a long weekend and it's like, man, this is great. And you're energized and you're loving life, right? Like that was their little trip to Denver. And then you come back to work and you're like, it's all still happening here. It's all still going down, right? The inbox is still full with a bunch of stuff, right? Like there's John Gruden's office. Like it's in flames.
They're trying to trick us this weekend. I'll just say that much. Let's move on before I get myself in trouble here. But the Lions are at the Rams. Rams laying 16 points. Again, another super massive spread. Some might look at this as the Matt Stafford revenge game or the Jared Goff, this is why you traded me game. Either way, that's a lot of points. And I can't lay 16 points. But again, if there is a team to lay the 16 points with, it might be the Rams, who just keep going and going and going and going. I don't know with these big boy spreads, man. I need your help here on this one.
I know, right? And I mean, you could say this about any game ever, right? It's going to come down to turnovers. It's going to come down to a bounce here or there. Like, you know, if this game's a 14-point game, is the game-ending interception or fumble going to be returned for a touchdown, or is it not, right? Like, that's kind of the difference here. Obviously, you know, you get your recipe for a big spread, right? What do you need, right? It's not complicated. It's a two-pronged recipe, if you will, two-stage recipe. HelloFresh, right? It takes you 15 minutes and you're ready to eat. It's bad team gets blown out last week, good team blows out a team last week. Those two teams play each other and we all expect blowout here. Now, again, this isn't this as sort of principled as the Cardinals and the Texans, where it's like 17, 18 points. Like, we could, you know, three scores and we could still cover this game. Mm-hmm. But it's a numbers play for me. I don't have this number at 16. I didn't have this number at 15. I thought anything higher than two touchdowns was too much, because I have this at about 12.6. So I don't want this to come off as like, oh, he thinks the Lions have a chance to win. I mean, it's the NFL. In theory, mm-hmm. any team has a chance to win. You mentioned the quarterback stuff. That is problematic, right? You're not going to have the Rams sort of falling asleep here, because if they've seen Jared Goff in practice, they're all sitting there going like, I could get a pick, right? I could get a fumble. I could totally do that. I did that in practice all the time, right? So they're not going to be like, just show up and go through the motions. Meanwhile,
Aaron Donald's like, I've been waiting for this for years.
Right. Like, I could have all the touchdowns. Like, there's going to be a big man touchdown here potentially. And that being said, right, like, it's just too many points for me to be like, well, let's just get on board here with the Rams. Because again, even if Matt Stafford like needs to punch in a late touchdown, that might be a situation that happens more likely if the game was in Detroit. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I just don't see this. You know, again, it's just a numbers play. This isn't, you know, we don't have a look ahead spot the same way that we do with the Cardinals. Anything like that. For me, like, this is a 12.8 mm-hmm. point spread that we're getting 16 on. And again, if you're talking sort of next generation key numbers, 14, I suppose, is a key number. So yeah, like, this is why it's kind of Detroit or nothing for me here. You know, somewhat on principle, but somewhat just based on numbers.
Take the points and look away. I can get down with that. But with so many massive spreads this week, plus there's so many teams on bye, we're into the middle, not the middle of the season, but we're at week seven. The survivor conversation is getting really, really interesting. But with a bunch of these big boy spreads, are one of those teams kind of the play this week for survivor? Or is there another game that we haven't really mentioned yet?
Yeah, this is stressing me out, and it shouldn't, right? Because this should be so easy that, like, it should be so easy a caveman can do it. Listen, there's four teams, right? Arizona, the Rams, Tampa Bay, even Green Bay sort of in the mix there as like, oh yeah, no, like, none of these teams are losing. And they're probably not, right? But this is kind of the real true beginning of Survivor. Like, we all kind of survived a couple of weeks ago. You and I personally survived in a big way last week. But like, this is where it's like, okay, strategy map out time. Who's willing to sort of do what they have to do to get to the end? And whether you're playing sort of 20 weeks the way they do in the big Las Vegas one, or whether it's just 18 weeks in your home survivor pool, this is where, right, like, the rubber meets the road, or the sort of forks in the road come up here. And so I think you could probably skip by all of those. And I think the proper move is actually the Patriots this week. And again, it depends how many games and how many teams you need and all of that sort of thing here, right? Yeah. But like, there's plenty of space here to use the Rams. Tampa Bay is the one that would be sort of my other pick. If you wanted to take the safe pick and not sacrifice that much down the road, like, there's a couple of sort of, I'm not even calling them better options, just other options where you might prefer the Bucks over, you know, kind of a mediocre team. There's a Tennessee potential down the road where you're like, I don't really love Tennessee, so I rather take the Bucks here. But like, how much are you willing to mortgage right now to save up for later? And so the Rams are definitely a save up for later. The Cardinals are a save up for later for me, because I have to play Christmas as its own specific week. That might be a reasonable play for somebody who doesn't have to play Christmas as their own specific week, in which case, like, you've got it better off than we do from that standpoint. Yeah. A little bit worried about Green Bay. Again, I would, you know, as a general rule, we've talked about this before. I want to take a team at their absolute best. I don't think Green Bay is at their absolute best right now because of injury reasons, et cetera, right? So that's one where I'm like, not really that psyched up about it. So the proper play this week, quote unquote, is the Patriots against the Jets here. They're at home. They took care of business against the Jets. The thing that I'm worried about, is that the same Jets team that it was a couple of weeks ago? And I just mean from a health standpoint, right? Like a lot more guys healthy on offense. Zach Wilson might be a little bit better. The yardage discrepancy wasn't all that great, right? He threw four interceptions. And this is, you know, whatever, but like, what if he doesn't throw four interceptions this week, right? Like, what if the yardage matches up and the Jets can stop the run? And if there's anything that's opened things up for Mac Jones, it's the Patriots run game, right? And so, he's thrown a lot of crosses off play action, you know, and post routes and et cetera, et cetera. So I'm a little bit worried about that. So like, if you want to be safe and conservative, take Tampa Bay. If you don't have to deal with Christmas as its own specific week, which most don't, just take the Cardinals. But the one that's going to be the risky one this week, that's going to save you some stress later on, if it survives, is the Patriots. I'm just not sure if that is the one that's going to survive, because one of these has to lose, right? Like everybody can't just march on the way that they have over the last few weeks.
Super interesting stuff for sure when it comes to Survivor, and super interesting stuff as we look ahead to a big boy matchup. If you're Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, as this is a chance to really show out as they're playing against the Baltimore Ravens. Ravens at home, 6.5-point favorites. Ravens are riding high. And I kind of feel the same way about the Ravens as I do about the Packers, just on different levels, right? Different tiers.
Yeah.
No, but sure. I've been burned by them the whole season because I'm kind of been like, I don't know if they're as good as I think they are. You know, like they're right. Kind of winning games and getting by.
Yeah.
But should I change my ways here with the Ravens as 6.5-point favorites? Or, hey, am I just drinking the juice too much of Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase?
No, man, I think if you like the Bengals here, I think they're a very reasonable play this week. And this is, where is it? Oh, I still haven't purchased one. It's a red light special, right? Like turn on the little thing, get it going here, sound the alarm, right? If it's not, you know, part of it is sort of, reductionary, right? Where it's like, if those survivor picks, if you will, aren't the team that's going to get upset, what's the one that you wouldn't necessarily take in Survivor, right? There's a reason you're probably not looking to take the Ravens in Survivor, because they're playing a pretty good team in this Bengals team. And if you look at some of the metrics here, right? Like when we think of the Ravens, we go, okay, like Lamar Jackson, like he's obviously an issue. But when it comes to the, you know, opposing quarterback, you know, they got to deal with the Ravens defense. If you look at some of the metrics, right? Like yards and some of the real basic stuff here, yards per carry from a run game standpoint and net yards per attempt on a passing standpoint, which is essentially, you know, yards per carry only passing version. The Bengals are the better team on defense than the Ravens are, right? Now you can get into comparing, you know, opponents, right? The Bengals haven't dealt with the Chiefs and the Chargers, you know, and to a lesser extent, the Colts, right? They've, you know, Jacksonville's and whatnot. So obviously that's a little bit different, but like at least just from on paper through six games, like at least the Bengals are comparable defensively and offensively. It's really interesting to me. Joe Burrow loves the blitz, right? Like we saw against Jacksonville where they're like, let's go five wide here. We know Jacksonville's going to bring it on that like key play of the game. And like Joe Burrow's like, let them blitz. Let's go. Let's spread it out. Let's go five. I will get this done, right? He loves it. One of the top quarterbacks against the blitz in the league. Again, limited sample size because he's only been healthy for, you know, what, half a season plus a little bit more.
Yeah.
But the Ravens blitz a ton. That's what they do, right? It's blitz, blitz, blitz when it comes to, Wink Martindale, as everybody calls him. Because, you know, anybody whose last name is Martindale has to be called Wink. So the point is like, he's going to get a lot of blitzing. And like you said, whether it's Ja'Marr Chase, whether it's Tyler Boyd, whether it's Higgins, or the sort of two-headed monster that they now kind of have going out of the backfield. And CJ Uzomah is the tight end, who's actually been pretty good here as well. Like they have guys who can burn this blitz, whether it's draw plays, screen plays, or obviously traditional passing game. On the flip side, Lamar Jackson also really loves the blitz, but in a different way, right? He can do the fake runs. He can do the, you know, quick pop passes. Or by the way, if you blitz and you miss him, he's gone, right?
Yeah.
Who blitzes really, really frequently? Not the Cincinnati Bengals, right? Like they are in the bottom five of blitzing. So yeah, blitzing team Ravens going up against a team that likes to, you know, face a blitz, whereas the Bengals will sit back and rush four on you, right? And that will allow them play a little zone, you know, neutralize Lamar Jackson as much as they possibly can, right? As much as you can with a guy like Lamar. I think it's a very competitive game. I'm not positive. I'm not positive that the Bengals aren't better than the Ravens. Okay, the Ravens are better. I'm just saying, like, on this given day, this could be an opportunity for the Bengals to throw the kitchen sink at the Ravens, because they got beat up by the Ravens last year. And we always talk about these teams, right, that they show a little more in the games they have circled on the calendar. And it really helps to have a game circled on the calendar if you didn't have much of a game the week before. Right. Well, the Ravens had a Monday night football game that they needed everything to beat the Colts in. Then they played a Chargers team that everybody was really excited about, that was going to be big for AFC standing. The Detroit Lions were the foes of the Cincinnati Bengals last week, right? They didn't have to do anything in the second half. They could hold things back. They didn't have to do, right? They didn't have anything special. They might have that back of the playbook page ready to go here for the Ravens. And so I don't want to be sitting here on Tuesday being like, man, we should have seen that coming. Like the Bengals, like this was their step up game, that they would have a full chapter of stuff that they've worked on for this team. And so I'm going to sort of jump in front of that and go like, yeah, give me the points here with the Bengals. I'm going to include them in all Moneyline parlays this week. I think that's the red light special. I think that's the upset of the week.
I like it. I like that one a lot. And, you know, we mentioned just beforehand the Packers and the relationship I've had with the Packers all season. And as I look at this week, the Packers are 7.5-point favorites at home to the Washington football team. I've been having trouble with buying into the Packers, but they've been covering spreads. Yeah. And now we look at one that's going over 7. What do you think about this one here? And where are you at with the Washington football team? Because that's where I'm kind of struggling here to be like, am I really going to sit here and rely on them to cover what I've seen Green Bay do less or do more against better teams?
Right. Yeah. And like we talk about record, right? And it isn't just my record or your record and like the fraudulency that's, you know, in and out of that and how, and the thin line or whatever, right? But like you see some of these Green Bay games, and if you watch them start to finish or you watch them for the first half, you go, I don't really understand how they are covering these numbers, right? Like last week, 17-7 against the Bears. And it's like, that wasn't a 17-7 game. And like against the Steelers, right? It's funny, right? They don't get called for offsides last week against the Bears, and the Bears were in sort of, you know, field goal adjacent range. If they get called for offsides, a 5-yard penalty, you know, potential drive extender for the Bears. Justin Fields, veteran move, right? Thinks he's got them jumped offsides, throws
the Aaron Rodgers move, dare I say.
Yeah, right? Like free play, and it's like interception, and then everybody's looking around on the field, like they're turning over like the ottoman that's in the middle of the field. And they're like, is it over by the coffee table under the couch? It's like, no, the flag is nowhere to be found. Right.
Yeah.
It didn't just like hit a Packer in the pants and is like blending into the yellow of the pants. Right. So and he's like, oh, so we're done here. That's an interception. Like, that's what the situation is. And like, yeah, man, sorry. And meanwhile, the week before, or a couple weeks before, right, the Steelers time the field goal block perfectly. Mm-hmm. They get the block, they get that touchdown. It's a 10-point swing, but they're offsides apparently. And it's like, no, man, actually they just timed it perfectly, but our old person, like, you know, line judge eyes can't kind of like wrap our head around the idea that they could actually be that quick, right? And so it's like, wow, just those two plays alone probably turn from an, at least against the spread stand. We're not saying like the Bears would have won the game. I'm not saying the Bears would have won the game, right? But we're talking about razor's edge against the spread stuff. And that's before we even get to, right, the Lions Monday night game where Jared Goff's small hands are fumbling the ball in the rain after being up 3 points with an 11.5-point spread, right? So there's
that one hurt
right
my feelings.
There, right?
Don't remind me.
And if so, a couple of things go a little bit differently, and we're sitting there going, man, the Packers are 1-5 against the spread. And maybe they are still 3-0 in those games, but like it's looking a lot different from a money-making proposition here. So I say all that to say, like, I don't really have a massive handicap on this game where it's like, well, the red, you know, I almost called them the bad word, the Washington football team can run the ball on the Packers, or that they can stop Aaron Rodgers. I don't really believe any of that. I just look at this and I go, the number was 10. It was immediately bet on the Washington football team, right? Oof. And that's not me and you just like sitting there like waiting and waiting, waiting, right? Like that's really sharp money that's coming in and waiting for that opener, knowing that 10 is too many points. And I agree with that because my number is 7 on the dot here. So I wouldn't be surprised if Packers win by 7. That seems like a thing that they do, right? But like, if you can get 8, I think that's a very reasonable play. I think this could be a 14-point game where we get into that 2-point conversion situation after Washington gets a late touchdown, right? Because let's be honest, all of these games, no matter how dominant one team is versus another, a lot of these games just come down to one 50-50 type of a play, right? We saw the Browns last night dominate the Broncos. And again, if you were on the Browns early, which again, you never should have been based on just rudimentary looking at the injury report or the news and hearing about Baker Mayfield. If you were on Browns minus 3.5, like you still probably felt pretty good about the way that game was going. And then one thing like a spot or a fourth down, right? One thing goes wrong and all of a sudden that's a 3-point game, right? And the Browns are sharp enough to fall after the first down instead of have their guy run it into the end zone, which, you know, he absolutely could have. So again, point is, all of these things are 50-50. Just follow the market in this one, I think, is probably at least your best indicator of what side that maybe you should be on. But just make sure that you get the most points possible. And I think that's probably 8, 8.5 by the time Sunday rolls around.
Yeah, and speaking of Sunday, obviously there's a Sunday nighter. I was going to call it a big Sunday nighter, but that would just be a straight lie. It's a decent Sunday nighter, right? And I'm saying that as a Niners fan.
I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, but hey. Before we get to that, though, right, I just want to give a reminder to myself, to you, and to the viewers that you need to head to drf.com/sports for all of the insight and analysis, including the in-depth game previews from our guy, Scott Gramley, who gives us this nugget. He says, the Niners are just 14-17 straight up and 10-20-1 against the spread in regular season home games since Shanahan took over as head coach. And for the record, that number does not include the 3 games last year in which they had to play in Arizona because of the pandemic stuff that was going on. It's just one of those things to me that I know you talk about a lot about our perception of Shanahan, right, the reputation of Shanahan, and kind of what the reality is, whether we're talking about real record or against the spread. Now, I'm a Shanahan believer. I'm a Shanahan rider. But as I look at this number and the Niners are 4-point favorites against the Colts, that falls in the Vegas zone. There's whispers of Jimmy G in the mix again. Shanahan also coming out of a bye week. The big boy plays might be coming out for primetime. I want to take the Niners, but I don't really like it.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like I'm way out in an island over here, right? With, like you said, my San Francisco take. And I'm also developing, you know, sort of a latent Colts take here, right? And I think that's almost kind of the more interesting one, because like you and I have talked about Shanahan and how I'm, so you know, I sort of think he's a high rent Cliff Kingsbury, et cetera, right? And so like, I can see why people would like San Francisco if we're sticking to our guns about before the season, right? Where I'm like, I think they're a sleeper to make the Super Bowl if they're healthy, and I like the game planning. He drives me nuts when it comes to the fourth down calls, and even the play calling against Arizona was insane on those third and fourth down key plays where it's like, all right, let's just have Trey Lance drop back to pass. And it's like, that's not what he does best, right? So I say that all to say, we know what we're going to get here with San Francisco, that I'm kind of off of that train. Now, maybe the couple of weeks, and listen, the game plan will be great. The scripted first 15, I imagine, are going to be electric. They will probably take an early lead in this game. But when I want to talk about the Colts here, and again, I hesitate a little bit because we just watched them play the Texans. And it's always going to feel a lot better after you play the Texans.
Yeah.
But this is more a sort of a big picture thing. Mm-hmm. Don't sort of just handcuff yourself to yourself from before the season starts, especially if the season starts the way that you think, the way that you thought that it was going to. So, you know, I come in and I go, okay, listen, Carson Wentz is already hurt in the preseason, and like, this could be a disaster. Quentin Nelson's hurt. Everybody seems to be hurt, like in one way or another. T.Y. Hilton was out, et cetera, et cetera. And I go, like, this could go off the rails. I even talked about a Colts worst record in the league bet being a reasonable opportunity at like 40-1, right? Because again, if Wentz doesn't come back, they don't have a, you know, viable backup quarterback. And again, a bunch of other guys are injured. There's not going to be the infrastructure there. And then they go and they lose to Seattle. They lose to the Rams, right? And they start really, really slowly. And it's confirmed, right? You're like, oh, see? Like, they might totally melt down here. Like, they might be not very good. And if you just sort of stick to that and you let that, you know, sort of frame the way that you look at a team the rest of the season, or even for a couple of months is going to be the rest of the season, right? Like before you know it, it's going to be too late to be like, you know what? Like maybe this team isn't that bad. And for me, it comes down to Carson Wentz, as it always does, right? And you and I have talked about our boy Carson Wentz, and we would talk ourselves into them on every week. We would like bet the Eagles because it's like, this is too many points. Like the infrastructure of the Eagles, they have too many good players for them to be this many underdogs or this short of favorites. And then Carson Wentz would turn the ball over and over and over again. And we'd be like, that just ruins it. That ruins all of it. Like, get this guy out of my life, get him out of the league, yada, yada, yada. And so we have that interpretation of Carson Wentz being this turnover machine still. Yeah. But I wrote about this week in calling this my upset of the week, even though I'm now sort of shifting to Cincinnati as sort of obviously it's a bigger upset. But you look at it and you go, he's got an interception and he's got a fumble lost. And each one of those was in the first two games of this season. There's a lot of quarterbacks, man, who have turned the ball over more than two times in six games. So if your case is Carson Wentz turns the ball over a lot, okay, that's true historically, but the facts are the facts. Two turnovers in six games, and that's against the Ravens. That's gets them. It's not just the Texans, right?
Yeah.
And so the team gets healthier, right? They're focused on Jonathan Taylor running the football. He's better. We talk about him a lot, being better than people give him credit for. And the offensive line potentially getting Quentin Nelson back, who's the best guard in the league, is going to help that run game even more. Sucks that Paris Campbell came back and then immediately got hurt basically after scoring a long touchdown due to his speed. But between him and T.Y. Hilton, that extends the field, right? Everybody calls stretching the field. But when you don't have any speed on your wide receivers, right, you can't beat a team deep. You can't make them play off of you. So you need T.Y. Hilton in the lineup, right? You never know with T.Y. Like, he was good to go last week, gets a touchdown, but might not be in the lineup this week. Hopefully that's the case where he actually is in the lineup. Again, bummer about Campbell. But so the point is like, if we're going to judge Carson Wentz off of the Philly days, right? Like, that's really unfair to him if he's showing us that we can trust him not to turn the ball over. And if he's going up against a Jimmy G here who has not shown us that he's not going to turn the ball over. And if this Colts defense is as good as we think that they might be now, of course, after I wrote that piece about them being the upset of the week, they go and they have their key safety blow out his Achilles. I feel like that might be my fault because, you know, that's the kind of jinx that I can hammer on to people sometimes. But that certainly sucks. And that's not something that you want going up against that misdirection San Francisco offense. So this might be just a situation where you wait and you play this game live, because I think there's a better chance that San Francisco comes out with that script, right? That first 15 plays, it's cooking. Debo Samuel's doing things. George Kittle. Well, or I shouldn't say Kittle because I believe he's out for this game. But like, you know, just in your mind's eye, right? You can picture the offense just absolutely cooking off of those first 15 plays. So maybe it's a wait and see. Maybe San Francisco scores first and then you can get a little bit better of a number. Maybe there's some sevens or something like that out there. That's kind of how I would do. It's a Sunday night game, right? So you have time to kind of work it a little bit. But yeah, I just like the Colts in general more than I did at the start of the season. And that's sort of an important thing to sort of just understand. Like, you can change your mind. We get a fresh set every week, right? Fresh set of games to make bets on. And it's probably a really good idea to forget everything that you just saw in order to make a clean sort of observation on some of these teams. And I've sort of flipped on the Colts, or I'm open to the idea of them flipping. Now, I don't want it to be a referendum just this game. And it's like, oh, they didn't cover, so you were wrong. I'm not going to overreact to this game because, again, I think the spot is really good for San Francisco with regards to game plan stuff. But yes, in general, I like the Colts, and I've got a bet here on the Colts +4.5.
My dude, I totally understand exactly where you're coming from. I just felt really gross about saying that I'm going to take Carson Wentz against my Niners. That's just that's the heart talking more than the brain. Sure. And I'm going to wait around and see where that number lies for sure. Saints -4.5 at the Seattle Seahawks. Now, this is on Monday night. I'm sure Russell Wilson is rattled that he's missing another primetime game, but the Saints are coming off a bye week, some extra time to prepare for Geno Smith. Russell Wilson has some more time to prepare for his fake huddles. Yeah. I just see Jameis, you know, they're coming off the bye week, and Jameis and company and Sean Payton just airing it out against a horrible Seahawks secondary and doing more than Big Ben was able to do, because Big Ben.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, I mean, who could, you know, how you can't not get excited about Jameis versus Geno on a Monday night. And honest to God, the best bet on the entire board is that we're going to see Russell Wilson do that elaborate, you know, routine, right? Like, go ahead, yeah. Get whatever odds you want to give me. I don't care. Like 1-17, right? Like I will lay 1700 to win 100 on that, because you're basically just giving me free money at that point. Yeah. Convenient, right? Like somehow even Russell Wilson gets injured right before two primetime games and still ends up like prominently involved. God help us if this goes to overtime and he's out there calling the coin toss again. Right? You know, we don't need to, there's not a ton in this game as far as like break it down type of thing. I'll just put it this way. Ratings, right? We all, you know, I talk about ratings, especially on Tuesday, right? We get into the weeds on that, and hopefully that's helpful for people, sort of even just putting a numerical value on where we see some of these teams. And so we talked about the Seahawks game against the Steelers last week, and we're like, okay, the number's 5. What do we have? Like, we know what we're going to get from the Steelers, right? We had them at 50, like a dead even, like mediocre team. There's no way they're 10 higher or 10 lower than that. They're probably right around 50. So if we know that that's a constant from a mathematical standpoint, a little high school math for you, and we know the variable is the Seahawks with Geno Smith, to get to -5 on the Steelers, the Seahawks had to be 40. Right? Which obviously they would never be a 40 with Russell Wilson. They have to always at least be better than 50. And so we're like, okay, they got to be a 40. Well, they covered. They were competitive. The game goes to overtime, which is to say they were probably a little bit better than a 40 in that game. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. So let's just say, conservatively speaking, that we're going to put them at a 40 again. Right? So we're going to give them even less credit than we probably should. Right?
Okay.
Meanwhile, we have to have our new constant, right? That's the Saints. Saints are very much like the Steelers, where it's like, there's probably not going to be that many. I shouldn't say like, there's not gonna be that many highs and lows, because it's Jameis Winston. We've talked about how they've played really, really well, and they have played really, really poorly, right? But their average is kind of around like 55, right? Like a little bit better than average. They're certainly better than the Steelers. So if we decide that they're a 55, 56, maybe even 58 type of a team, and we even say that Seattle's a 40, which again, we just agreed they were better than at least on Sunday night. There is no way that I can get to 5 as, you know, the Saints, being 5-point favorites on the road in Seattle on a Monday night. Cannot do it. Can't even really get past 3, right?
Can't
so
do
I think
it.
That this, no, I can't do it. So this has got to be 2.5 or 3. But, you know, obviously the Saints get some credit for maybe being a little bit better than they are. And maybe the Seahawks take a drop off of that game last week. And maybe they play like a 35 or a 30, right? And that's all very, you know, possible here. But just from a mathematical standpoint, this number has to be closer to 3 than it is, you know, over 3. So which means it's just a fundamental, I have to make a bet on the Seattle Seahawks, right? Again, not much in the way of game handicap or whatever, but it's just sort of like an ipso facto situation when it comes to the ratings. So yeah, give me the Seahawks. You can get 5 out there. I'm happy to take that.
I totally understand what you're saying here. And I think the biggest part that I fall for in the narrative thing is not understanding the extra tax that is being applied to the Geno Smith is starting again. Right. And it's like, we just saw last week that he was more than functional. Like he wasn't the reason they lost. I know that TJ Watt made him fumble and I get all that, but do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, a lot of QBs are fumbling that ball. Yeah.
Yeah. Geno Smith did his part. Right. Yeah. So you're getting the points at home, a second week of practice with the ones, knowing you're going to play. Maybe he builds a little more confidence. That's interesting. That's interesting. And hey, the Jameis train, if I'm not going to be out here trying to predict which Jameis Winston is going to be playing. So I totally see what you're saying there. So, hey, you don't have to talk me. You don't have to work hard to talk me into taking points. So
that's fair. It's great.
I like that, my dude. I like that. So let's head to college football in what we call our Campus Rush segment. And there's a lot of ranked underdogs this week, especially in our big games. I find this kind of interesting, but let's get to some of the big games that will make the headlines this weekend, let's say. And let's start with Clemson at Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh favored by 3.
Yeah, and honestly, this is a theme for this entire week. And if you thought the NFL schedule was a little janky this week, I introduce you to the college football slate this week. And listen, the four big games are literally like in name only, as in like I just decided to name them big games because they're interesting to me.
Hey. But we make the rules here, okay? We make the rules.
Right. If you have a family, if you have a wife, girlfriend, or whatever, and they're like, hey, we got to go get the pumpkins for Halloween, Saturday might be your day, right? Like, again, I love college football as much as the next guy. I'm certainly not going to get the pumpkins on Saturday. We can figure out a day during the week where we can go get some pumpkins. But if this just happens to be your lot in life where you have to come up with a time, this might be the one because you can absolutely skip this week. And so the theme is, as you mentioned, right? Ranked underdogs on the road against home teams that are favored. So, okay, right, you sort of automatically get your sort of dander up, if you will, going like, wait a minute, like the undefeated team is not the favorite in this game. And it's because that team might not be the better team. So you mentioned Clemson and Pittsburgh, which is the sort of, by very technical definition, the exception to the rule here, Clemson is not ranked and Pittsburgh is ranked. Our guy, Kenny Pickett, involved, right? We've been circling this one on our calendar as a potential show out game for Kenny, and that's why they are the quote-unquote big game, whereas most people would be like, why is this the big game? Because it's really a relevant game in the ACC, and I think personally it's a really relevant game in the Heisman Trophy race. But again, any other year, even before this year, even 2 weeks ago, this was Clemson ranked and Pittsburgh unranked, so I'm counting it as part of all of these games. Do I necessarily have a massive play in this game? No, but we're circling it because we want our guy Kenny to show out. I'm not betting Clemson, even though, like, in theory, that should be the play. The other games that I refer to in this sort of category, right? Oregon on the road at UCLA. Now, this is only a 1-point UCLA favorite here, and they have certainly spent some time within the rankings here. I think UCLA gets this win, right? I am absolutely betting UCLA in that circumstance. We were on Cal last week against Oregon. Cal should have won that game up in Eugene, or certainly had every opportunity to at least tie that game at the end. And so we're going to take UCLA at home. The one that a lot of people are probably confused about, and maybe not when you talk to our guys out in Iowa, right? We are huge in Iowa. We're still not sure why, but we are absolutely massive in Iowa. Billboards, I think, on the side of the highway, or we're very close to it. Oklahoma State, undefeated Oklahoma State. They're in the top 10. That is what is going to happen if it is late October and you are undefeated, right? We saw them make the comeback against Texas last week. They are getting 7 full points at Iowa State this week. If that isn't sort of like a warning shot, right? That this whole sort of ranking system, et cetera, is out of whack here. Again, I would have to give them those points. I would have to roll with Iowa State here and the Cyclones if I had to make this bet. I was hoping that this would be 6.5. It does not appear that it's going to get there. So -7 would have to be good enough if you are looking to absolutely, definitely bet this game. If you are in Iowa and you are listening to this and you're saying, man, I don't know if I can give those points, but I really want to bet on my Cyclones, do it. Knock yourself out. And then the last one here, and the one that I'm really excited about, God knows why, is San Diego State, right? My Aztecs, I'm a San Diego guy. They are ranked for the first time all season. That's usually troublesome when it comes to these sorts of things, right? And they are underdogs at Air Force, a team that we have been riding a fair amount in the hurry up offense this season to success, right? It's a 6-0 team against a 5-1 team. I don't care what conference you're in, even if you're in the Mountain West, you are counting. We are counting that as a big game because, listen, it's 11-1 combined record. Like, you have to give credit to those teams. I love Air Force in this. So Air Force and UCLA are absolute plays for me. Iowa State, I think you shouldn't be necessary. If you had to bet it, I would take Iowa State. Don't be afraid about those points, right? I think that's an indicator. And Clemson and Pittsburgh, our guy Kenny Pickett, like, I'm going to be watching this game hoping my guy's throwing touchdowns all over the field on Saturday, not picking pumpkins. When you say Pickett, that doesn't mean pumpkins. Stay home and watch football.
Fair enough, my dude. Fair enough. But as we continue here, you start to hear the music come in, and we know what time that is. I'm going to fully clear out because it's time for the hurry up offense, our rapid fire NCAA pick segment. And you know what? I'm just going to let you continue to cook here. Take the reins, go through this, rifle through, and finish strong here.
Yeah, I mean, do we have to? We almost swept the board last night in college football, 2-1. I woke up to find out that UNLV blew a 7-point lead in the second half and did not cover the plus six. That was unfortunate, but we went 2-1. And sometimes, Sheldon, as you know, the best bets are the ones not made. If you'll recall, on Tuesday's show, we talked about how the line had gotten out of hand for Coastal Carolina at App State. And as much as we don't care for this App State team, and we would love to take Coastal Carolina, we couldn't lay the 4 points, especially when that open pick. And of course, App State gets the win outright, so we don't take a loss. Sometimes that's more important than anything else. Now, again, we talked about how janky this schedule is, so we're only going with 15 games this week in the hurry.
Oh, no. How will we survive?
Only 15, and none on Friday, because the best thing I have on Friday is UConn plus 15 against Middle Tennessee State, and the second best thing I have is Arizona plus 18 against Washington. And why would you bet on either of those teams on a Friday night? Why would you live that life? So just skip it. But just so everybody knows, that's what we're talking about when it comes to the grimy Friday schedule. If that's the best we can do, maybe find some Friday night pumpkin patch. I don't know. Anyway, back to the story here with regards to our 15 in the hurry up offense. Kansas State at Texas Tech pick, and we were on Kansas State last week. That did not end up going well. We were hoping Skylar Thompson off the bye was going to be healthy enough to run the football. That's a key element to the Kansas State offense, is the quarterback running. And you saw right away, he was sort of hobbling around and not willing to go. There was a couple where he sort of scrambled and you're just like, this guy does not have it. I think this guy, sixth year senior, is playing on potentially like a torn ligament in his leg. That's not where you want to be here. I think this Texas Tech team under Matt Wells is having a sort of sneaky good season. And I think they get the home win here as basically a pick 'em. You know, you could even potentially get plus one out there. Here's one that's pretty grimy. It was grimy last week, but it worked. Northwestern won last week outright, plus 2.5 against Rutgers. Certainly a different story going to Michigan this week, but Michigan has Michigan State coming up. And again, somehow, some way, Michigan State is undefeated and they don't play this week. And so, you know, whether it's a bye week for Michigan State or Michigan sort of treating this week as a bye week, going very vanilla, a lot of run game stuff. I imagine they're going to run the ball a ton. I imagine Northwestern's going to run the ball a ton. And when we're talking about 23.5 points here, that's going to be tricky for Michigan to cover with, I think, relatively few possessions against Pat Fitzgerald's team. So we're happy to take Northwestern plus the 23.5 points. Wake Forest at Army. Speaking of undefeated teams that we're still not really sure about, right? Wake Forest is one of those teams. So they're getting credit for that record, minus 3 on the road. But Army, I think, shocks them. It's not going to be that much of a shock. Listen, it's a 3-point underdog. So Army plus 3 is certainly a play here. We were on them last week against Wisconsin and got the cash there. Texas State, Georgia State. How's that for a game, right? How about, let's get deep into the recesses of the Sun Belt this week. There's just not that much between these two teams. And like, I might be wrong here, or maybe something's going on that I don't necessarily know why there's 11 points being given here. I don't really get it. I'll take Jake Spavital's team to keep this thing close. They never win close games. Guess what? We don't need them to win close games, right? We just need them to keep it close. They did that for us last week with a cover and not a win. But you know what? All the cash spends the same. BYU is taking 4.5 points on the road to a Washington State team that has won 3 straight games. I think we were on Washington State in every single one of those games. But what's happened at Washington State since last week? Well, Nick Rolovich cut his nose off despite his face and got fired for not agreeing to be vaccinated. And a couple of coaches also. So you go, man, you're going to take Washington State? They just lost their coach. Like, we go through this all the time. NFL, right? We just did this with, you know, the Raiders and John Gruden. It's just not that big of a deal on a week-to-week basis. Now, maybe BYU wins this game on the road. Maybe they cover. But Washington State is a better team than they are getting credit for. I don't know how much Nick Rolovich was really doing on a game-to-game basis that it was giving them those victories. I'm all over Washington State getting plus 4.5. I think that's way too much of an adjustment for what's going on at Washington State. Colorado and California. I don't think Colorado even scores a point in this game. This Colorado team is awful. Their offense is non-existent. Cal's defense, traditionally good, maybe not as good this year, but I don't think they're going to need much more than 20 points to cover a big number here, -9.5. You and I talk about this all the time. If we're going to lay a big number, let's make sure the defense is good so that if we don't have to score 40 points and that we're not open to a backdoor potential type situation. So yes, for me, California -9.5 is a play here. LSU at Mississippi, another 9-point favorite that I'm going to ride with. Obviously, speaking of coaching issues, Coach O gets fired. He's hanging in there. They beat Florida last week. Is it the last ride? You know, or are they going to be just motivated the rest of the week? From a football standpoint, I don't know if you watched that game, but like they rode interception after interception from Florida, right? And we talked about how Anthony Richardson should be the quarterback for Florida. And that was never more evident than watching them throw interception after interception until they brought Anthony Richardson in. Now, he threw one himself. But again, I don't think Matt Corral is going to throw these interceptions. Now, there's been some concern about whether Corral is going to play, but this game has been lined all week, so it's not like they're worried to see if he's not going to play. He threw his first interception of the season last week. So I don't think that LSU is going to get the turnovers the way that they did against Florida. So -9 is a decent enough play for an Ole Miss team that's going to be able to score, obviously, a ton, as they always do. Maryland and Minnesota. This Minnesota team, mega Jekyll and Hyde. Maryland just played sort of the two toughest games of the year, right? Iowa and then Ohio State. I don't blame them for getting their breaks beat in from against those two teams, especially the way Iowa's turning the ball over. A little concerned because some injuries on offense for Maryland, but I think they are good enough to win this game potentially at Minnesota, but certainly getting the 4.5 points, I'll be taking that. We couldn't get through this without a MAC game. Give me Toledo as small home underdogs against Western Michigan. Boston College failed us last week. Like, we had them at home, 3-point underdogs to NC State. Now they go on the road to Louisville. I think they're going to be able to hang with Louisville in this game. I think they're going to be doing enough on defense, and Louisville's defense is going to make Boston College's offense look better than it actually is. So we're getting 6 points here with Boston College. I am fine with that. I think they're alive to potentially pull the upset there. East Carolina, +13.5 at Houston. Houston has looked great. We have been on them a bunch of times, in some cases as underdogs, and they keep winning by 3 touchdowns. But that's against Navy and Tulane and Tulsa. Every week we come on and we say, who is this Tulsa team that deserves to be favored? Who is this, you know, Tulane team that deserves to be favored or in the same region? We didn't think anything of those teams, so why would we think that much of Houston, where we are willing to not take the 13.5 points with our guy Holton Ahlers and the East Carolina Pirates? I think they hang in this game, in a game that could, let's just be honest here, could be 45-40 for all we know. They're going to hang in here. They might do the whole last score type of thing to get under this number as well. So ECU +13.5. We talked about San Diego State and Air Force, Temple and South Florida. South Florida is a favorite in a football game against an FBS team. That's a thing that's happening this weekend. Now, I realize it's the like 73rd most important game on the schedule, but that doesn't mean that we can't take advantage of it. Let's grab Temple. They got smoked by Cincinnati, but guess what? Join the club there. Everybody is going to get smoked by Cincinnati the rest of the season here, especially if you are not on the upper echelon of the American Conference. So I'm not going to beat them up over that. And the last time we saw them before that, they beat Memphis, which is a pretty good team. If you can beat Memphis, you can beat South Florida, because if you can breathe and you have a pulse, you might be able to beat South Florida. So you know what club they're going to join this week? It's the club of beating South Florida, which everybody is a member of. So we're taking the 2.5 points there, the money line, the whole thing with Temple. And then two more to go here. UTSA. You're going, yeah, we got to be on UTSA. We do it every week, right? No. No, we are jumping off the UTSA Roadrunners train. We are not running with them here against Louisiana Tech, a team that we have also been on a fair amount. They got embarrassed last week against UTEP. I don't know what that was about. UTEP might be good. They're 6-1, something along those lines. I don't know what's going on over there. But the point is, they got embarrassed last week. Now they return home. UTSA, speaking of teams, like we talked about with San Diego State, that have jumped into the rankings. Whenever you see that number next to your name, right, things get a little tense. And now they go on the road. We've seen like that has been pretty good to them as when they were underdogs. They are not underdogs anymore, right? They do not have that chip on their shoulder. They have the weight on their shoulder. So give me the 6 with Louisiana Tech here. I think that's going to be a tight game that Louisiana Tech might win. Again, we love our Roadrunners, so we're not cheering for them to lose. Just keep it close. And then finally, Utah and Oregon State. Utah wins at USC comfortably. Looks impressive. Last week, they pull it out in the second half, storming Arizona State. Those are two really big wins. Shell, what do we know after teams, especially college teams, have two really big wins, and now they go on the road against a Oregon State-y type of a team, right? That's letdown city. Utah has UCLA coming to town next week. This is the classic standard sandwich spot. It's -3 Utah. A lot of people are going to be like, Utah is undefeated in the Pac-12. Like, we have to take the -3. That's such a short number. We've talked about this before. Oregon State is sneaky pretty good here. We're going to take them +3 as home underdogs on Saturday. We're going to stay away from the Hawaii game. We're going to pretend that doesn't even exist because honestly, the schedule is such that you can get to bed early. You can get to bed early so you can get up early on Sunday morning to go pumpkin patch picking because there's no London game to watch on Sunday. So you know what? Let's schedule the pumpkin patch situation for early on Sunday. Let's get to bed early enough on Saturday to do it and keep everybody happy in our lives and hopefully cash a few tickets along the way.
Well, I'm happy because you just gave us the goodness as per usual. I'm here rocking to the beat as per usual because it's another Friday and we've been blessed with so many picks yet again. Thank you, Mr. Matt Russell, for coming through. But if the people want more information from you, where can they find you on social media?
Yeah, at MRussAuthentic on Twitter. And the hockey season has started. So if you're looking to dabble in that, I'm dabbling as well. I took the worst beat of probably what's going to be the entire season the other night in hockey. 5-3 empty net goal. And you're like, yeah, we're good to go here with a minute to go. They review it. A completely pointless offside puts that back to 4-3. Everybody knows what happens. I said it to my partner, Emily. I was like, they're going to tie this game. Literally 15 seconds later, they tie the game. Don't have to tell you what happened in overtime, but let's just say they lost. And so a 5-1 Tuesday night becomes a 4-2 Tuesday night. And so immediately you're like, yeah, hockey season is back. So whether it's hockey, college basketball is coming around the corner here. You and I are going to have some discussions about that. And then obviously NFL college football stuff are commiserating and are celebrating on a daily, nightly basis is over there. And of course, everything that I write for The Score gets retweeted up there as well. So you always know what we got going on. So you're ready for these podcasts on Tuesday and Friday.
Really appreciate it, my dude. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, brother.
Thanks to Matt for coming on the pod. And if you want to follow me online, you can do so on Instagram at Sheldon Alexander and on Twitter at Shell Alexander. Also, check out our recent NBA season betting preview pod. Like and subscribe to the DRF Sports Podcast, wherever you get your podcast. And remember, we got all kinds of NBA information as well on the website. Again, that's drf.com/sports. For more on this new project from DRF Sports, first off, we got to give you the reminder, because if you're not familiar with the letters DRF, well, Daily Racing Form has been around for over 100 years, giving you all of the horse racing information, data, and analysis. But now we're taking over the entire sports world. So if you want coverage on every football game, as well as the NBA, MLB, and more, head to drf.com/sports for all of the details and insights, as the site has all the data on every game, including offensive and defensive stats, betting angles, line movements, key injuries, head-to-head records, and team stats. The DRF data is what powers our power trends. So if you want to see which trends our analysts have selected, follow us on Instagram and on Twitter, or like us on Facebook. And if you want access to all of the raw data, drf.com/sports. That's where you need to be for all of the usual previews into every game. Plus, we go in depth on this podcast. However you want your betting information, we've got you covered. Again, my name is Sheldon Alexander. You can find us here on the DRF Sports Pod every Tuesday and Friday. That's all I got for now. But until next time, see ya.
Thanks for listening to the DRF Sports Podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review the show. For more sports betting advice, go to drf.com/sports and follow on Twitter at DRF_sports.